In my homily 2 weeks ago, I characterized Amos as the prophet of justice. By that, I meant that Amos, acting as God's spokesperson, trumpeted clearly and unequivocally God's insistence that the behavior of the Israelites be coherent with their status as God's chosen people, especially in their dealings with the poor, the vulnerable, and those who lacked social visibility. Then, in last week's homily, I described Hosea, rather unconventionally, as the prophet of a broken covenant. For Hosea, the covenant between God and the Israelites formed the bedrock of their relationship. Far more than a simple MOU that could be entered into or dissolved at will, the covenant relationship was equivalent to a marriage that one enters for life, to have and to hold, for better, for worse, till death do us part. As prophet, Hosea charged the Israelites with multiple infractions against that covenant. Today, as church, we take up the book of Isaiah. At 66 chapters, it's the longest of the prophetic books, and it's the one we hear from most frequently at Sunday Mass. In my own idiosyncratic shorthand, I identify Isaiah as the prophet of God, the heartbroken mother, because that's how God chooses to portray himself in this telling. It's God at his most personal, most vulnerable. Yahweh is no longer simply the umpire adjudicating fair business transactions, as in Amos. He's no longer simply the injured partner in a broken covenant, as in Hosea. Here in Isaiah, God presents himself in terms that are more intimate, more familial, more vulnerable. Yahweh is like the mother who revels in tender love for the child nursing at her breast, like the parent who delights in capturing the first faltering steps of her child. But in the end, Yahweh is also like the inconsolable mother who endures soul-crushing rejection when her child, now grown full stature, willfully veers off on his own self-destructive path. This is a God with whom any parent who has felt the heartbreak of a child gone wrong can easily identify. Isaiah chronicles the story of this parent God who has come to the end of her rope. Her relationship with her child is hopelessly shattered. She resorts to the courts to have the relationship annulled and to affix the blame squarely on the offending party. Just listen to God's pain as he pleads his case in the opening verse of the first chapter. Hear, O heavens, and listen, O earth, for Yahweh now speaks. I reared children and brought them up, but they have rebelled against me. English translations fail to capture the poignancy and pathos of God's anguished outburst against Israel. The two English verbs, reared and brought up, are insipid renderings of the Hebrew verbs gadol and rum, which hint at a depth of parental devotion and attentiveness. The Hebrew verbs suggest a dedicated and tender nurturing that enables a weak and vulnerable child to evolve into a strong, independent young adult. By this account, Yahweh is clearly not at fault for what has happened. God has expended himself completely in caring for Israel. Nevertheless, recalcitrant Israel has rebelled. The Hebrew word for rebel, pasha, connotes argumentative, even aggressive resistance. In their pig-headedness, the Israelites have ruined what might have been a loving, reliable, nourishing relationship. And this is where today's reading picks up. Yahweh, once the plaintiff, now pivots and becomes the prosecutor. First, he presents his indictment. Listen carefully to how God addresses the culprits. Hear the words of Yahweh, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the instruction of God, you people of Gomorrah. God identifies the wayward Israelites as denizens of Sodom and Gomorrah. Do you remember the Genesis account about those villainous cities? Two angels disguised as humans visit the cities and are offered hospitality by the righteous man, Lot. The residents of the towns approach Lot and insist that he turn the strangers over to them. Their intent is to humiliate the strangers, possibly by abusing them sexually, though here the biblical author is teasingly discreet. For their evil attempt, the city and its inhabitants were utterly destroyed, leaving not one single survivor. Now, imagine God here in this opening of the book of Isaiah, hurling this despicable, abhorrent epithet at the Israelites. Can you begin to fathom the depth of God's heartbreak yet? In his anger, God flatly rejects all of Israel's liturgical practices, which in years gone by celebrated and strengthened their love and friendship. God spurns them now because of their insincerity. Their religious performances are incompatible with their disregard of the poor and the vulnerable. And so now Yahweh pronounces sentence. Trample my sanctuary no more. Bring no more worthless offerings. When you raise your hands in prayer, I will hide my eyes from you. Though you pray more and more, I will not listen. Your hands are full of blood. Yahweh's covenant with Israel is over and done with. It is difficult to imagine a more massive rejection of the chosen people than this. God will not look. God will not listen. God will not respond. And precisely because of the ringing finality of that court sentence, we are not prepared for the concluding verses of today's reading, which suggest, inexplicably, that there might yet be a route back to Yahweh. Wash yourselves clean. Cease to do evil. Learn to do good. Make justice your aim. Make amends to those you have wronged. Defend the orphan. Plead on behalf of the widow. In other words, Israel's loving relationship with Yahweh might yet be restored, but only if there are profound changes. And forget about liturgical rituals, they are of no use. Only with radical changes in social relationships can the ragged cords of love and trust be knitted together again. Only when Israel practices authentic justice toward the widow and the orphan, toward those in the community who are weak and vulnerable, those without an advocate, and therefore subject to political exclusion and economic exploitation, will God consider the possibility of reconciliation. Israel is lost unless there is a total and radical reorientation of her entire way of being. It's a pity that we only get to spend the next 4 days on the book of Isaiah. A pity that we will only read snatches from 5 measly chapters of this heartrending yet hopeful book. In fact, I think if one were to study and pray over this vital piece of God's testament to us, as George Friedrich Handel certainly did in preparation for his oratorio Messiah, it would be nigh impossible for a disciple not to be moved toward confession, contrition, and conversion. I doubt, however, that many of you will have time to read Isaiah in its entirety over the next several weeks, although that is my intention, as I have not done so in several years. As an alternative for you, may I suggest that you spend a few minutes reflecting on the anguished heartbreak of God, our mother, in today's reading from Isaiah, and then pause to consider some of the social perversity in our nation that continues to break God's heart today, the searing indifference with which we treat refugees and migrants, the unyielding disgrace of racial inequality, the persistence of hunger and food insecurity in this richest country in the world. You might end by listening to that chorus from Messiah, "All we like sheep have gone astray." Tell me that it won't move you to tears. I append a link to a YouTube version of the chorus to the written version of this homily. May God bless you and give you health.